The following interviews and commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
It's time again for Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio with the latest news and conversation related to firearms and your Second Amendment rights. Sponsored by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. And now, Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Welcome, listeners. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in throughout the hour to join us, 458-8255-458-TALK. What's on your mind about firearms today? What a great couple days we've been having in Fairbanks. I was sure enjoying those sunny days with the deep blue skies. But we do need some rain. It is only 46 degrees this morning. And here at the KFAR Broadcasting Station, Melissa is yet again expertly running the board for us. Thank you, Melissa. And of course, she's keeping the archives up to date. So if you miss a program, it should be accessible within a day or two. And I appreciate that too. So what's on our agenda today? I will continue delving into our multi-week discussion on Dr. Gav Schneider's book, Can I See Your Hands? A Guide to Situational Awareness, Personal Risk Management, Resilience, and Security. I will be doing some recapping, but today will be the last recap because after that, we should know the fundamentals that Dr. Schneider uses as groundwork, and in the next couple weeks, we'll move speedily through the rest of the book. And I want to talk about last week's holiday, Rocky Road Ice Cream Day, with mention of Bugs Bunny. And just so you know, today is Donald Duck Day, and I'll mix the holiday with some history for a discussion about Disney animated training videos during World War II and the boy's anti-tank rifle. So last week we celebrated Melissa's birthday with cake and chocolate-covered strawberries, and I did not have time to tell you about the June 2nd holiday, Rocky Road Ice Cream Day. Now, some years ago, I read a quote, and if my memory is correct, it was from either Ben or Jerry from Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream. I can't remember the exact words, but the thought was that the reason their smooth vanilla ice cream was the most popular was that when people got home from work after a rough day, they wanted to enjoy and be soothed by something simple and smooth. They did not want chunky things in their ice cream. They already had to deal with chunky things all day long. So let me take a minute to talk about last week's holiday, Rocky Road Ice Cream Day. There is a historic reason behind the name Rocky Road Ice Cream, and I've taken information from two articles, How Ice Cream Helped America at War from The Atlantic Online by Matt Siegel, and Ice Cream, America's Secret Weapon in World War II at SpouseLinkAAFMAA.com. That was a new one to me, and that stands for American Armed Forces Mutual Aid Association. I read about a Warner Brothers cartoon from 1944 where Bugs Bunny was marooned in the Pacific under Japanese attack. And Bugs commandeers an ice cream truck and starts handing out good rumor bars. In reality, they are chocolate-covered grenades. And the bars explode, and Bugs Bunny drives off in his ice cream truck, but not before wisecracking, business is booming. And ice cream was booming as, quote, America's secret weapon during the war. Ice cream, in fact, played a significant role in the nation's wartime efforts and would be used for support in the military-industrial complex for decades, unquote. And by the way, Bugs Bunny played a big role in World War II. Warner Brothers pitted Bugs Bunny against Adolf Hitler, Benito Mussolini, Francisco Franco, and the Japanese. And a few of these cartoons have been pulled from circulation because today they're not politically correct. Now, April 30th is National Bugs Bunny Day, so the next time it falls on a Shooter's Corner date, I'll talk about how Warner Brothers used Bugs Bunny to boost our morale during World War II. But prior to World War II, in terms of food, the military was mostly interested in ensuring that soldiers consumed enough calories to perform their jobs. So during the First World War, this was the job of Herbert Hoover. Hoover was the first administrator of the U.S. Food Administration, and Hoover sold the notion that food will win the war. He wanted American families to, quote, Hooverize meals by sacrificing wheat, sugar, meat, and fat, the origin of meatless Mondays and wheatless Wednesdays. The result was a rapid tripling of food exports, yielding more than 18 million tons of food staples for the war effort in America's first full year of war alone, unquote. And the ice cream industry fought back during World War I. They wanted our government to subsidize Allied ice cream factories throughout Europe. Quote, in this country, every medical hospital uses ice cream as food, and doctors would not know how to do without it. But what of our wounded and sick boys in France? Are they to lie in bed wishing for a dish of good old American ice cream? They are, up to present, for ice cream and ices are taboo in France. It's clearly the duty of the Surgeon General or some other officer to demand that a supply be forthcoming, unquote. Now, fact is, back then, there was a severe shortage of sugar, and proper refrigeration units were pretty scarce. Hoover's Food Administration ordered a reduction in ice cream manufacturing, saying, quote, ice cream is no longer considered so essential as to justify the free use of sugar in its manufacture, unquote. Now, World War I ended November 11, 1918. Prohibition was in place from January 1920 to December 1933. About 10 years after World War I, and to include the Prohibition years, we experienced the Great Depression from 1929 to 1939. And Americans were experiencing a long period of tough times, recuperating from World War I, experiencing Prohibition, and making ends meet through the Great Depression. Well, not being able to sell spirits, American breweries at the time, including Anheuser-Busch, began selling soda and ice cream to stay afloat. In case you're wondering, the ice cream float was not invented by breweries selling soda and ice cream to stay afloat. The ice cream float was invented by Robert McKay Green in Philadelphia in 1874. And one story is that on a hot day, Green ran out of ice for the flavored drinks he was selling, and he used vanilla ice cream from a neighbor vendor to cool his drinks. And that is how he invented the ice cream float. But getting back to my story, I read that by the end of the 1920s, Americans were enjoying more than 1 million gallons of ice cream each day. It was providing the comfort and diversion previously provided by alcohol, which of course was banned during Prohibition. So now we come to Rocky Road Ice Cream. It was William Dreyer, who founded Dreyer's Ice Cream, who created the term Rocky Road Ice Cream. He marketed Rocky Road Ice Cream as a metaphor to help people cope with the Great Depression. Rocky Road Ice Cream had rocky chunks of chopped nuts and then marshmallows. And the crash of the stock market and the Great Depression was a rocky road for many people. Quote, when World War II hit, countries on either side of the conflict once again banned ice cream, with Britain adding insult to injury by endorsing carrots on sticks as a wartime substitute. But the United States doubled down. Ice cream had become inseparable from the American way of life and from that point forward from military tactics, unquote. I read that in 1942, when Japanese torpedoes slowly sank the USS Lexington, which was at the time our second largest aircraft carrier, the crew abandoned ship only after breaking into the freezer and eating all the ice cream. Quote, survivors described scooping ice cream into their helmets and licking them clean before lowering themselves into the Pacific, unquote. By 1943, American heavy bomber crews figured out how to make ice cream over enemy territory. They strapped buckets of ice cream mixed to the rear gunner's compartment before missions. By the time they landed, quote, the custard would have frozen at altitude and have been churned smooth by the engine vibrations and turbulence. If not, machine gun fire and midair explosions, unquote. Now, our Navy spent $1 million in 1945 converting a concrete barge into a floating ice cream factory. It was to be towed around the Pacific to distribute ice cream to ships incapable of making their own. It had a 2,000-gallon ice cream capacity and churned out 10 gallons every 7 minutes. But I will be back with you in about 2 minutes after we take this break.
Out in Arizona where the bad men are, the only thing to guide you is an evening star. The roughest, toughest man by far was Ragtime Cowboy Joe. He got his name from...
Spring is springing, and that means it's topper time. Get your truck ready for your crazy Alaskan adventures with a new Lear or ARE topper from Auto Trim Design. You can get cab high, high-rise, mid-rise, commercial, aluminum, or fiberglass. Want a tonneau cover? We have fiberglass, fabric, and aluminum. We have them in roll-up or fold-up in three-fold or four-fold. Just don't delay and see us today at Auto Trim Design, 2550 South Cushman.
And don't forget, as we always say, we will be here when the other guys are gone.
While you're out playing in Alaska, don't just rough it. Rough it in style with Arctic RV. Your RV is your magic carpet to the Alaskan dream. Keep it flying with service and the largest selection of parts in the interior. See row after row of every RV part and gadget you can imagine in Arctic RV's huge showroom. Schedule your appointment with Arctic RV for local service on all RVs. Rough it in style. Arctic RV is your hometown RV sales and service at 30th and Pegger.
Fish on! It's the Valdez Fishing Report, brought to you by Frontier Outfitters. Visit Frontier's extensive fishing department for conventional fly and saltwater tackle for every game fish in Alaska. Your store for the outdoors. Frontier Outfitters, for your Alaskan lifestyle.
It's time for the Valdez Fishing Report. Interviews, derby standings, tips, and advice for Prince William Sound.
Lori Prox here with Hayden Bricker of Valdez, reeled in a 75.4-pound halibut. And obviously you purchased a derby ticket because you made the leaderboard with that halibut. Tell me about that experience. Did you buy it on the boat or did you know about the derby beforehand?
I knew about the derby. I didn't really know like what it involved at all. The family I went with was just like, yeah, make sure to go get your ticket, and told me to go out and grab it.
All right. And was it exciting to actually have it weighed by the weigh-in clerk? How did that go?
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I mean, we were just hanging out, enjoying the sun for a little bit while we waited for them to come down.
And it can draw a crowd, can't it? A big fish?
Yeah, there's a crowd up top. I think there's some sort of tour going on. So they were checking out all the fish we brought up to take a family photo with.
You caught a nice size halibut, but it sounds like you did some other bottom fishing as well. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so we fish for, I think it's yellow eye rockfish and some black rockfish. I think that's what it's called, right?
Yeah, I think so. Excellent. Or a dusky rockfish. There's all kinds of stuff on the bottom there. People, you know, it's kind of a surprise.
Yeah, well, we went out expecting to do halibut and some rockfish, trying to get all of our limits if we could. Actually made location like three different times.
Stop by Eagles Rest RV Park when visiting Valdez and we'll take care of everything. We mean it. In addition to our full-service RV sites, campground, and cabin rentals, we can book you on a fishing charter, cruise, or other excursion. The Eagles Rest ticket office is open to you, whether you stay with us or not. So make one stop at Eagles Rest RV Park and let us worry about the details.
KVAK's Valdez Fishing Report. Fish Valdez and reel in a big one.
Frontier Outfitters brings you the Valdez Fishing Report, helping you make your next fishing adventure a success. Rods to tackle, coolers to camping gear. It's your store for the outdoors. Frontier Outfitters, for your Alaskan lifestyle.
KFAR weather.
Lots of sunshine today with a high of 64. Winds out of the northeast, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Mainly clear skies and quiet tonight. Lows level off around 42. Mainly cloudy skies expected tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 65. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Derek Height.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Call in at 458-8255-458-TALK and let us know what's on your mind about firearms today. So that was the Navy that had a 2,000-gallon ice cream barge towed around. But here's a quote about the Army. The U.S. Army constructed miniature ice cream factories on front lines and began delivering individual cartons to foxholes, unquote. And there's so much more ice cream making stories from World War II, but I want to finish this up. Here's a quote. The cherry on top came a decade later during the Korean War when General Louis B. Puller tried to convince the Pentagon that ice cream was a sissy food and that troops would be tougher if indulged with other products of American culture, namely beer and whiskey. The Pentagon responded with an official statement ensuring soldiers were served ice cream a minimum of 3 times a week, unquote. And one last tidbit to share. How did William Dreyer go about creating his Rocky Road ice cream masterpiece? Here's a quote from Wikipedia. He cut up walnuts and marshmallows with his wife's sewing scissors and added them to his chocolate ice cream, unquote. And listeners, the next couple of months, we may all be soothing ourselves with bowls of Rocky Road ice cream because discussions in our national and state congressional bodies will likely center on different means of firearms control, and that is a rocky road for all of us to travel. Now, we just talked a bit about Warner Brothers Bugs Bunny ice cream truck cartoon in World War II. Before Donald Duck boosted our World War II spirits, Disney Studios was busy too. Today, June 9th, is Donald Duck Day, but I'm going to use that as an excuse to tell a Disney World War II story. And yes, a gun is involved. And we have a caller. You're on the line.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the line with me, Laura.
Yeah, there's another interesting little story about the World War II ice cream is that the value of a naval aviator was established at 5 gallons of ice cream.
Say that again. I didn't catch that. The value that
of a naval aviator, when it was returned, fished out of the drink and returned to the carrier would buy the naval aviator back for 5 gallons of ice cream.
Oh, how interesting. Interesting. You know, there's a whole bunch of ice cream stories centering around World War II. I should do a whole program on that. Thank
well,
you.
Another little deal was in off Guadalcanal, the Marines made a churn out of an old belly tank, and they'd fill it with the ice cream mix, and they put a prop on the front to stir up the mix, and then they'd fly up to about 25,000 feet to cool it off, and then they come back and have ice cream.
It's so interesting. And I didn't know that the Army was delivering ice cream to the foxholes. Did you know that? That was
I suppose it would depend on the season.
Yeah, the season and what was going on at the time. Oh, dear. Well, I'm glad ice cream gave our troops a little sense of home.
Well, a lot of energy in it, actually.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of sugar. A lot of sugar. And it kept them cool. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you,
you
for
bet.
That story.
Bye.
Thanks. Okay. So popularmechanics.com has an article under military weapons titled The Disney Cartoon That Teaches You How to Fire an Anti-Tank Rifle, The Finer Points of Tank Busting in Animated Form by Eric Limmer, dated December 3, 2015. And here's a quote. Chances are you're aware Disney's World War II propaganda cartoons, those animated shorts complete with Donald Duck as a Nazi, cartoonish exaggerations of Hitler, and astonishingly racist caricatures of Japanese Emperor Hirohito. Over the course of the war, Disney produced a handful of these anti-Japanese and anti-German shorts at the behest of the U.S. government. But before Donald Duck saluted Hitler in Der Führer's face or single-handedly destroyed a Japanese airbase in Commando Duck, Walt Disney Productions was working on something a little more toned down and less aggressively cartoonish, animated instructional videos for the United States Armed Forces, unquote. The cartoon was about the proper use and operation of what was called the Boys Anti-Tank Rifle. And the Boys was named after Captain Henry C. Boys, who was Assistant Superintendent of Design and a member of the British Small Arms Committee and designer of the Royal Small Arms Factory at Enfield. The Boys Anti-Tank Rifle was a 5-foot, 36-pound, 55-caliber British anti-tank rifle used during World War II, and it was nicknamed the Elephant Gun. It was only effective against light tanks and tankettes used early in World War II. It was not effective against heavier armor and was eventually phased out mid-war. There were three main versions of the buoys. The first was an early model called the Mark I, and it had a circular muzzle brake and a T-shaped monopod, and was built primarily at BSA, that's the Birmingham Small Arms Company in England. And later, a Mark I with an asterisk by it, so Mark I asterisk, was built primarily at John Ingalls and Company in Toronto, Canada. And that had a rectangular muzzle brake and a V-shaped bipod. And then there was a third model for airborne forces, and it had a 30-inch barrel and no muzzle brake. And there were also different cartridges, with the later version, or the latter version, having better penetration. And here's a quote from Wikipedia. The 55 Boys cartridge was an adaptation of the 50 BMG, and for those who don't know, that BMG is Browning machine gun, with a belt added, firing a 735-grain bullet. At its introduction, the weapon was effective on light armor, 0.91 inch thick at 100 yards, unquote. And I read that 0.91 inch thick metal was about the thickness used on the frontal armor of half-track or armored cars, or the side or rear armor of a light tank. Later, a more effective round was developed, and that round fired a tungsten cord projectile at 3,100 feet per second. Now, here's another quote. Despite its recoil slide and rubber cushioned butt pad, the recoil of the weapon, along with the noise and muzzle blast, was said to be painful, frequently causing neck strains and bruised shoulders. Consequently, the Boys was almost never fired as a free weapon, that is, not affixed to support, except in emergencies, unquote. The Boys anti-tank rifle really does have a long history. It was in service from 1937 to 1998. There is a long list of countries that use that gun. I read that 771 of these rifles that were produced in Canada were sold to the United States for use by our Marine Raiders. And the Marine Raiders were active from 1942 to 1944 during World War II, and then they were disbanded due to the nature of their mission change. But the Marine Raiders were reestablished in 2014 and are presently operating, at least that's from what I've read. The Marine Raiders were special operations forces and were originally established by the U.S. Marine Corps during World War II to conduct amphibious light infantry warfare. However, the nature of the war in the Pacific changed to more large-scale amphibious assaults against well-defended islands, and that negated the need for small light units that could strike deeply into enemy territories. There were two famous units. One was Edison's Raiders of the 1st Marine Raider Battalion, and Carlson's Raiders was the second of the 2nd Marine Raider Battalion. Now, leading Edison's Raiders was Merritt A. Edson, and his nickname was Red Mike Edson. He was a general in the United States Marine Corps with two Navy Crosses, Silver Star, and two Legions of Merit. He received the Medal of Honor for his leadership in the fight on Guadalcanal. After he retired, among other positions, he was a director of the NRA. Carlson's Raiders in World War II, they were led by Evans Fordyce Carlson. And Carlson is given credit with, quote, developing the tactics and attitude that would later come to define America's Special Operations Forces, unquote. Now, Carlson led two famous historic raids, the Macon Island Raid in 1942 and the Long Patrol, also called Carlson's Patrol. The Long Patrol, or Carlson's Control, they went deep behind Japanese lines on Guadalcanal and killed 488 Japanese. Carlson, too, received a number of medals, including two Purple Hearts. Both General Merritt A. Edson and General Evans Carlson deserve a Shooter's Corner history segment of their own when their dates cycle through. Carlson popularized the term gung-ho, which in our language is used to mean overly enthusiastic or energetic or zealous. And if anyone wants to be the smartest person in the room this weekend, know that the term gung-ho is thought to have originated from the Chinese term of a similar pronunciation that means to work together. And here is a quote from Wikipedia again. The linguist Albert Moe studied both the origin of the usage of the term in English. He concluded that the term is an Americanism that is derived from the Chinese, but its several accepted American meanings have no resemblance whatsoever to the recognized meaning in its original language, and that its various linguistic uses, as they have been developed in the United States, have been peculiar to American speech. In Chinese, concludes Mo, this is neither a slogan nor a battle cry. It is only the name for an organization, unquote. So now that I know that, I think in the future I will use a synonym for gung-ho and not use the word gung-ho when I am super enthusiastic about something. And are we ready for a break? Okay, we're going to go to our break, and then I'll finish this up around the corner.
The Buzz and Health Talk. Local programs to help inform you. Only on KFAR 97.5 FM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
News. I'm Rich Dennison. House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy is dismissing tonight's primetime hearing on the January 6, 2021 Capitol riot, saying the select committee is biased.
Let's be honest. It is a smokescreen for Democrats to push their radical agenda.
Democrats say the public needs to know the seriousness of the Capitol attack and about former President Trump's efforts to overturn his election defeat. The FBI today arresting one of five Republican candidates for Michigan governor, charging Ryan Kelly with misdemeanors for his suspected role in the Capitol attack. AAA today saying gas prices are now averaging $4.97 a gallon across the country.
Now over $5 per gallon in 11 states and far more than that in California.
Fox's Jeff Manasso, prices up $1.90 a gallon from a year ago. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
KTUU reports that Juneau police made another large drug bust at Juneau International Airport on Tuesday, according to a news release. Ryan Timothy Lee, 26, and Cole Jacob Ripley, 21, both of Juneau, are charged with second-degree misconduct involving a controlled substance and third-degree misconduct involving a controlled substance. Around 3 p.m. Tuesday, members of the Southeast Alaska Cities Against Drugs Task Force made contact with Lee and Ripley as they got off a flight from Seattle to Juneau. The two were believed to be carrying narcotics, police said. During the investigation, officers seized around 3,050 counterfeit oxycodone pills, believed to contain fentanyl, and 68.78 grams of methamphetamine. Juneau police said the drugs have an estimated street value of around $103,000. Lee and Ripley were confined in the Lemon Creek Correctional Center. This bust comes just 3 days after police seized more than $100,000 worth of drugs from a woman coming into Juneau on a flight from Seattle.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
When you go so far up that river that you need an airboat, that is very far. You've got to make sure that airboat is in perfect working order before you leave. 100%. You know what I mean? Call Rogers Auto Repair. They know airboat maintenance because they've been using and maintaining airboats for decades. Rogers will put your airboat in top shape before you disappear up your favorite skinny little creek in Alaska's wilderness. Give them a call. Rogers Auto Repair. Call 479-6665.
There's fishing, and then there's dip netting. Frontier Outfitters knows you need to maximize your catch and that you're working against the clock. So they make it real easy for you to get what you need fast, whether you're on a boat or shore. From permits to dip nets, they carry fighting handles, D-handles, and more. So your tired, numb hands can hold on when that big king tries to yank your gear into the river. Plus those poles and the extensions for those deep holes and replacement nets as well. Your next outdoor adventure starts at Frontier Outfitters for your Alaskan lifestyle.
Hi, Steve with Auto Trim Design. Be it work or play, your truck bed will take a beating. You need to protect your investment with an Arctic Spray-On Bedliner from Auto Trim Design. Our Arctic Spray-On Bedliner was developed as a commercial coating for use on the Alaska Pipeline, which is exposed to our extreme Arctic conditions. Why should you or I settle for anything sub-quality? Get your Arctic Spray-On Bedliner today at Auto Trim Design. And as Ben says,
we will be here when the other guys are gone.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in at 458-8255-458-TALK and tell us what's on your mind about firearms today. And I hope all of you are enjoying a bowl of Rocky Road ice cream while I talk to you on this program. So I read that the boys' rifles were authorized for U.S. Army Rangers in 1943, but they were not used. So our Marine Raiders used them, but not our Army Rangers. During the Korean War, the Marine Corps borrowed some of the boys' rifles from the Canadian troops. We have a caller. Caller, you are on the line.
Hi, Laura. This is Ron.
Hi, Ron.
You were mentioning some of the discomfort felt when the troops were trying to fire those anti-tank weapons.
Non-supported.
It put me in mind of an article I saw. It's been at least in excess of 30 years ago in one of the gun magazines. And it as part of the article, it included a four or five photo sequence of Elmer Keith attempting to fire from a standing position, handheld, a BMG.
Oh, dear.
And it literally screamed to the ground.
Wow.
I wish I could remember the gist of the article, but the photographic sequence was outrageous.
Oh, goodness. Now, I have to look. I'll see if I can search for something like that, or Google it. Maybe something will come up. No, thank you. And in a few minutes, I'll give everyone a link to the video that this training video that Disney did. And I think you and everyone else is going to really enjoy this. It's a piece of history.
I look forward to it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right,
for telling me about that. I'll see if I can find it. Okay. So during the Korean War, the Marine Corps borrowed some of the boys' rifles from the Canadian troops, strengthened the action, and mounted them with scopes, and they were used as long-range sniper rifles on an experimental basis, firing double-charged 50 BMG ammunition, and these rifles had a range of over 2,000 yards. Nazi Germany captured a number of these rifles after the evacuation of the British Expeditionary Forces in Norway and France, and so those rifles went into the German service. The Soviet Union received 3,200 boys' rifles from the Lend-Lease program. In total, I counted 20 countries that used the boys' anti-tank rifle. So back to the Disney and cartoons and the boys' anti-tank rifle. The Disney video now on YouTube that we all want to watch is titled Stop That Tank 1941. And there are a few on YouTube with similar names, but they're not the entire original video. They cut parts out of the original, or they are simply making comments about the original. So get a pen and pencil and write this down if you want to watch. I'm not going to give the whole link because that will take too long, but just search on YouTube, Stop That Tank 1941. The correct video is 21.36 minutes long, and it was posted by Nuclear Vault. So Stop That Tank 1941. It's 21.36 minutes long, and Nuclear Vault posted it. And I'm not sure why they call it Stop That Tank 1941, because Disney supposedly created this in 1942 as a training film for the Canadian government. And I think you'll really enjoy it. Disney is said to have contributed a number of instructional videos, including some animated, to the war effort in 1942 through 1945. And from that Popular Mechanics article I mentioned earlier, quote, while revisiting the more pungent animated propaganda of the time can be a little cringe-inducing, these instructional videos will hold up pretty well. They are educational artifacts about weapons of a bygone era, as well as remnants of a fascinating partnership, unquote. And I think you'll get through the cartoon part of that video after the first 3 minutes or so, and then it gets into the instructional part. And it is a little cringeworthy. What they are saying is that in our current politically correct woke world with the characterizations and prejudices shown back then in cartoons, we can no longer watch those things. And some of the old war days cartoons have been taken off of YouTube or any other websites. But this one about Stop That Tank 1941 is still available to view. And like I said, after the cartoony portion, about 3 minutes or so of that, is the training film Disney made for the Canadian government. It's fun animation. And I hope you all enjoy it. Now, I want to move on here to continue our discussion of Dr. Gab Schneider's book, Can I See Your Hands? A Guide to Situational Awareness, Personal Risk Management, Resilience, and Security. And I won't spend too much time, just a little time, doing a recap from our last discussion, because it's been about 3 weeks since we've talked about this. And you can find the Shooter's Corner sessions for this book review in the archives, April 14, April 28, May 5th, and May 19th. And if you want to integrate into your training much of what I've talked about in this multi-week book review, I recommend two things. First, buy the book. Second, take classes from instructors like Chuck Indereedon and practice your awareness and defensive skills continuously. And how does Dr. Schneider, the author, recommend you allocate your time? And this is part of the recap. I think this is the third time I've repeated this on this program. And we should have memorized it by now, and I won't go over it again after this, but it's important. This is a quote from Dr. Schneider, 80% of energy and resources should go into prevention and avoidance, 10% of energy and resources on ensuring we could effectively manage a situation if it occurred, and 10% of energy and resources on ensuring we can recover afterwards, unquote. So put your time and energy into avoidance. Do that by recognizing what threats exist, which of those you're likely to encounter, and then be on the lookout to avoid them. Also, I recall I explained that Dr. Schneider tells us that for personal attacks, quote, most people don't even realize they're in a fight or have been assaulted until they've already been struck and are on the ground. Therefore, a critical component when it comes to being realistic is to understand that things will probably happen much quicker than we imagine, unquote. And remember we said physiological changes happen to us in an attack? They're difficult to plan for, and each of us may react differently. And I said we must have a plan that we will do in certain situations and how we will react, because once we have to react, we can't have these mental conversations with ourselves about what we're going to do, what level of force can I use under the law, how am I going to do this. Building that confidence and skill comes from proper training. We talked about Hicks' Law, which is the law of diminishing options. And I'm going to repeat this from a couple weeks ago. Quote, as we move closer to reality, i.e. spend more speed, more power, and more consequence in an attack, there are far fewer things we can actually do, unquote. And to recap that, quote, at 30% speed and 30% power in a simulated attack, almost anything is possible. At 50% speed and 50% power in a simulated attack, we lose half of our possible options. At 80% speed and 80% power in a simulated attack, roughly only 25% of what we think we can do is possible to do. When dealing with a full speed, full power attack, possibly only 5% of previous options are achievable, subject to the type of attack, the experience of the attacker and the defender, and a few other related variables, unquote. So if you don't want to become a victim, you must plan ahead to minimize the bad things that could happen. And planning ahead includes knowing how to properly train and then devoting a proper amount of time to doing that training. And it will probably sound like a walking advertisement for a check. I'm just trying to make a point here. If you have any doubt that you can handle yourself in a self-defense situation, or any doubt that you are training correctly, or any doubt about what you can and can't do under the law to protect yourself with a firearm, please take a class. The only person I know in Fairbanks who gives defensive handgun classes is Chuck Indereedon. His defensive handgun level 1 is this weekend, June 11th and 12th, and he has a defensive handgun level 2 coming up July 23rd and 24th. You do not have to be a super shooter or be practiced drawing from your holster. Chuck will work closely with you and help you acquire all of those skills. And that's what he and his wife and his staff do, and they do it very well. Don't worry about round count. There's large round counts for these classes. Chuck can provide you with the 9mm ammo. He has it available. Now, if you need to contact Chuck, you can go to c4traininggroup.com or call him at 844-966-4079. So very quickly, we went over Dr. Schneider's key concepts to be successful in our self-defense, and I just want to go over those. Let's see if I can do that before our next break. Concept one is acceptance. Concept two is proactive resilience. Remember that word, resilience. Concept three is that we understand reality versus perception. Concept four is integrating effective habitual practices into our daily life. Concept five is having an attitude of flexibility and agility. Concept six is creating within ourselves the attributes of resilience and survivability. And concept seven is that we work from a base of logical understanding. And I will finish this up after this commercial break.
Spring is springing, and that means it's topper time. Get your truck ready for your crazy Alaskan adventures with a new Lear or ARE topper from Auto Trim Design. You can get cab high, high-rise, mid-rise, commercial, aluminum, or fiberglass. Want a tonneau cover? We have fiberglass, fabric, and aluminum. We have them in roll-up or fold-up in three-fold or four-fold. Just don't delay and see us today at Auto Trim Design, 2550 South Cushman.
And don't forget, as we always say, we will be here when the other guys are gone.
While you're out playing in Alaska, don't just rough it. Rough it in style with Arctic RV. Your RV is your magic carpet to the Alaskan dream. Keep it flying with service and the largest selection of parts in the interior. See row after row of every RV part and gadget you can imagine in Arctic RV's huge showroom. Schedule your appointment with Arctic RV for local service on all RVs. Rough it in style. Arctic RV is your hometown RV sales and service at 30th and Pegger.
Weather brought to you by Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing, offering 24-hour service from Salcha to Nanana and no mileage charge on callouts. The Bigfoot with the helping hand. Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing.
KFAR weather.
High of 64 today. Under mainly sunny skies, northeast winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Mainly clear skies and quiet again tonight. Lows around 42. Highs around 65 tomorrow. More clouds and sun. Temperatures near average Saturday and Sunday with highs in the upper 60s. Chance for scattered storms Saturday. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in at 458-8255-458-TALK and let us know what's on your mind about firearms, anything that has to do with firearms today. All right, now we finished those seven concepts, and I want to remind you one last time about quality of life. When we develop our methods to be aware and protect ourselves based on Dr. Schneider's concepts that I just quoted to you, we have to recognize that how we do that requires a trade-off, and that has to do with our quality of life. We have a caller. Okay. Caller, you are on the line.
Yes, hello, is that me?
Yes, that's you.
So I just wanted to point out an irony that I found recently. I worked at a gun store back in 2008, and I started to notice a trend in the industry was when the political opposition takes control, gun prices skyrocket, gun prices rise, ammo mm-hmm. prices just completely go through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
But in doing my research, I found that the individuals who actually profit off of the spike in gun prices is, like, let's say, the Republican Party. Let's say when the Democratic Party takes control, the Republican Party goes into a fear-mongering campaign just so they can spike the prices and charge people more money for firearms. So I just kind of just want to put a call of action out there to people listening. We need to realize that it's our own political party that is jacking up the prices on firearms and making us pay double and triple of what these things are worth.
Okay.
So if we could all try to figure out how to make it to where
okay,
we don't go fear purchasing and fear buying,
Yeah, that's an interesting observation. And actually, I was going to talk about not the economics of it. So this is two parts. Later actually today, but I may not have time today, maybe next week. I've got two things I want to talk about. One has to do with, it's not so much fear-mongering, it's people in a panic. And I have a good percentage of people in my classes, students that have panicked and helped driven up those prices by panic purchasing and not buying what they needed, and I'll talk about that. The other part of that is the economics, and I have a really good article I've wanted to talk about. It'll take me about 15 minutes. Maybe I'll do that next week, about literally the economics of gun purchases across the United States and in our local community. And that's a whole nother issue, and I don't think that many communities realize how much money the gun stores, how much money this brings in locally to our own community. It's a pretty big deal. So I appreciate your observation. There's so many components that are involved with the politics of guns and what drives the prices up. It's not really just one thing. It's a number of things that are involved. So thank you for bringing that up.
And so real quick, so one of the local stores I was working at, it's been a local store. It's been in Fairbanks for a very long time. Getting an understanding of talking to the owner about how he prices everything, he was telling me back in 2008, his standard markup is like 10 or 20% on top of the manufacturer price. So steadily every single year or every single political cycle, we see the MSRP just completely just being increased and increased. And the gun stores, the gun stores aren't adjusting their prices other than just 10 or 20% markup. Mm-hmm. If they put a 30% markup on it, it's going to sit on the shelf and move, So where I went to some of these local gun stores when I was younger and I was able to spend $300 for an AK-47, now that the manufacturers have gone through their economics, now that, the political arena has done its thing, they're up to their prices of like $1,600 or $1,700 just for a base model Kalashnikov. And that's not really the local gun stores.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your information. I need to get on and finish what I'm talking about here. You're welcome to email me with, the information that you have, and I'm happy to take a look at that. But I think, in general, we're not interested in Kalashnikovs or those type of firearms. I think most of us that are listening here are more interested in the handguns we need for personal protection and for the sport, for hunting and that kind of thing. But go ahead and email me with your information. I'm going to have to let you go now so I can...
That was kind of a prejudiced response. That was very prejudiced. I mean,
Okay, sir. Sorry, we're going to have to cut you off now. Thank you.
Okay, so let me get back to this, and I will talk in a couple weeks about the economics, but not the economics that gentleman was talking about, the economics that really happen in communities, bringing money into our communities from firearms and ammunition sales. It's a bigger deal than we think. Probably quite a few million dollars are coming in from the sales and supporting families of the people who work for firearms stores. So now remember that continuum of security and comfort, it is a trade-off, and we've talked about that a lot. If you want ultimate security, lock yourself in a vault. But if you want to enjoy a reasonable quality of life, you have to find a middle ground. There are threats in the land of middle ground, and I think I mentioned that a couple of weeks ago, and that's why we must learn to recognize and assess threats to avoid them. We must learn to respond by protecting ourselves if we have not avoided them.
We have a caller.
Okay, we have a caller. Caller, you are on the line. Hello? Okay, we lost our caller.
Yep.
Okay, we lost our caller. Okay, so this is about where we left off on May 19th. I was sharing examples, a couple from the NRA magazine section on armed citizens, so that we can learn to practice a level of awareness. And I just finished talking about car thefts and carjackings. These are so prevalent in the lower 48, and I won't go back over all of that, but just remember, men normally keep their car keys in their pockets, and the bad guys know this. If they want your keys, either you give them up or you are in an altercation. And then we ran out of time right as I was about to tell you why women are in a different situation with carjackings. And this discussion is all about being aware of everything going on around you. It is pre-thinking out what could happen and how are you going to handle it. Now, carjackings and car thefts will mostly happen when you are exiting, entering, or immediately unlocking your car doors, as well as opening the side and rear gate doors while you load items into your vehicle. And in that position, your back is toward the bad guys, and you will have no idea, as Dr. Schneider explained, that you are in an attack until you are on the ground. So what is different about how women conduct themselves around our vehicles? We women tend to operate around our vehicles differently than men. As I said, men traditionally have their keys in their pockets. So women, think about what I'm going to say. If the men use a physical key to lock or unlock their door, they put their key back in their pocket. If they have an electronic key in their pocket, the door automatically unlocks. The key stays in the man's pocket. If the bad guy wants the keys, as I said, the bad guy either has to demand them, possibly with a gun in his hand, and that car owner either has to hand over his keys or the bad guy will forcibly take them. But we women tend to keep our keys in our purses, right? Whether a physical key to turn the car on or off or unlock the car, or an electronic key, where do we put our purses? The keys are in our purses. We unlock our cars, put our purses on the front seat while we load our stuff into our car with our backs to the bad guy approaching. We won't even see that the bad guy is approaching. We would get pushed out of the way and the bad guy takes the car because your keys are in your purse and your purse is in the car, not on you. And worse, now he has your purse with your cell phone so you can't call for help, and your license, and now he's got your address. So you get how bad a situation this can become very quickly. Just don't put yourself in dangerous situations and you will have greatly improved your quality of life. And remember, when we talked about Chris Sanog's book, The New Rules of Marksmanship, he wants us to train effectively by breaking down every movement we make, training with our guns into skill chunks. We analyze each skill chunk, every movement we make, and perfect it, and then practice it over and over. And eventually, we string all together the many skill chunks of all the firearm skills into one smooth movement. Now, my example with the car theft, the carjackings, is the same thing. But this time, analyze every step you take with your activities when you're around your car. Perfect what you do in ways that make you safer, and then practice it each time you're in that situation until safe procedures just become second nature. Immediately upon entering your vehicle, reaching over to lock the door is a skill chunk. And if you do it over and over consciously, eventually it will become an automatic response. So back on topic in this fundamentals chapter summary, Dr. Schneider explains that research has shown, quote, that human beings are not very good at fundamental risk management. Otherwise, we wouldn't be smoking, drinking, or taking really unnecessary risks, unquote. And that dynamic risk equilibrium we talked about a few weeks ago, quote, if you want to partake in risky activities, how do you mitigate that risk to a degree that it's unlikely to have very serious consequences? This thought process has led us into developing what we refer to as the field of hard risk management. Hard risk management refers to an integrated approach to the way you manage security, safety, and all other related concepts, such as dealing with emergencies or being able to continue with your everyday life or your business operations despite interruptions such as natural disasters or unseen circumstances, unquote. And he continues to remind us, risk is defined as the effect of uncertainty on objectives. Now, professionals that run businesses and professionals in high-risk jobs like law enforcement, military, even our healthcare professionals, they spend resource assessing risk. They have to create a backup plan or multiple plans to an array of emergencies that can happen. But most of the rest of us in our personal lives, we don't do that. And Dr. Schneider tells us that we need to do that in our personal lives. He writes that often people query and talk about the differences between safety, security, or emergency response, but at the end of the day, these should all be integrated functions. And that was a quote from him. He gives an example of someone at home at night hears a knock on their door and sees three large, aggressive, drunk men outside, and those men try to kick the door down. His example continues a bit, but at that point, what would you do in that situation? Would you call the police? Run out the back door of your house? Get your gun or any defensive tool you have nearby and confront the drunks? Would you hide in a secure room? You all have safe rooms, right? And I don't mean gun safe rooms where your gun safes are. I mean safe rooms. We talked about that probably last year. Well, you have a lock on the door and are equipped with a gun and a phone, and you can hide out until law enforcement's arrive. You've got to have a plan, and you've got to have it ahead of time. And Dr. Schneider says these choices are referred to as, quote, run, hide, or fight approach. It aligns to our basic fight or flight instincts in terms of the way we respond to a potential violent attack, unquote. Let's see, I've got how much? Maybe a minute here. And he explains the ideas of safety, security, and emergency response are an integrated approach, and this is called detect, deter, delay, and respond, and recover, DDDRR. Detect, deter, delay, respond, and recover, and that's an approach that we covered a while back. He calls it defense in depth approach.
About 20 seconds.
And we've got 20 seconds, so I am going to do something that I've been remiss in doing. The three safety rules: always keep the gun pointed in a safe direction. Always keep your finger off the trigger until ready to shoot. Always keep the gun unloaded until ready to use. And we will have a very interesting program next week. Stay safe, everyone, and enjoy the warm weather.
This has been Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio. Brought to you by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. To listen back to this or past episodes of Shooter's Corner, go to KFARradio.com and click on the archives page. For more Shooter's Corner on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.